Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with book artists Jessica Peterson and Yuka Petz about the upcoming opening of the artist book collection at Paper Machine. We'll also talk with children's book author Whitney Stewart, author of What's on Your Plate? Exploring the World of Food, and Mindful Me, Mindfulness and Meditation for Kids. Jessica Peterson and Yuka Petz are both book artists who live in New Orleans. Jessica runs Southern Letterpress, and Yuka Petz runs Studio Epiki. Today we're talking about their new project at Paper Machine, the Artist Book Collection, and a grand opening that's coming up May 19th. We're here at the Paper Machine on St. Claude Avenue. Jessica, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Oh,
you too, Yuka.
Thank you so much, Susan.
So let's talk a little bit about how Paper Machine got started and what sorts of things happen here.
Paper Machine just opened in November of 2017, and it's a center for printing for New Orleans, and we're really focused on printing artist publications and small chapbooks for local writers and artists who are interested in producing things in both the flat poster format and in the book format. So we work with people, and we're under the branch of Antenna, so we're a nonprofit and therefore able to provide people with really inexpensive printing options, and we work with people and consult on binding projects, and it's a really great opportunity for both us as a printing organization and Antenna and local artists to kind of have a resource for printing in New Orleans.
So you see something pretty spectacular when you enter the space, and we're going to have some sound from that. I wonder if you'd describe what it is we're listening to.
The building itself is kind of an art piece. The outside of the building is covered with this very bright, kind of geometric mural by Carl Joe Williams. And then when you enter the lobby of the building, there's a huge wooden sculpture that is a kinetic wooden printing machine. And that sculpture is by Chris Darris, who's a local artist in New Orleans. And you press a red button that looks like a panic button by the door, and that slowly turns on the paper machine, and it's all wooden gears, and it slowly turns and turns and turns, and different rollers and gears turn until it gets to a platen that's rotating, and on that platen are a bunch of rubber stamps that automatically print. So it's our way of kind of paying honor to the history of printing, which is both, you know, back in the day, a very old, slow-moving process, and now that we have, you know, computer-based printing, a lot quicker, so...
And there's a wonderful sculpture that's very Harry Potter-esque, too.
Chris also set up a sculpture that is a tower of books that open and close as you walk past them. So they kind of look like birds flying and then books at the same time. We're open from 9 to 4, 5 days a week, and we really encourage people to come by and check out all the sculptures and the printing options that we have here.
It's very resting to walk into the space. You see so much that you just want to stand and stare at. So, Yuka, before we get started talking about the specific collection you have here, tell us a little bit about what an artist book really is.
An artist book is a tough thing to define, and if you ask five people, you're going to get five different answers. From the collection, the ABC at PM collection standpoint, we try not to put too tight of a definition on it, but we look at it as artist-produced books where the structure, the act of reading, the printing is all through the hand of the artist, and the decision-making is through the hand of the artist. So they have control every step of the way from idea all the way to finished book.
So give us an example of one of your artist books.
So one of the artist books that I created when I was in graduate school is called Noun, and it's an exquisite corpse structure, which means that the pages open multiple ways, like swinging doors, or and you can basically, you can mix and match pages. You're familiar with them probably in children's books where, you know, you can change the head to the body to the legs of a creature. So my book, Noun, mixes and matches the first half of words with the second half of words. You can also blend their definitions and mix and match them to make new words.
So tell us about some of your favorite things in the collection here.
So many things. We actually just received a few new donations that I'm really excited to share with everyone. And the first one is a mid-century book by an artist whose name I'm probably going to mispronounce, but I'm going to do my best, Warja Honegger-Lavater. So she was working mid-century, and she did a whole series of these artist books where she retells popular stories and fairy tales basically through shapes and color. So she has a key in the very beginning, and the book that we have is William Tell. So there's a blue circle that represents William Tell. There's a smaller circle that represents his son. And then there's all the different characters, knights, soldiers, there's an apple, all the elements of the story. So then you turn the page, and it's just this composition of shape and color and movement across the page that gives you a sense of the action that tells you the story of William Tell all the way through in this very brief but intense and exciting accordion book.
And you can pull it out to its full length, and it comes in a little slipcase, and the whole thing fits in the palm of your hand.
Exactly.
It's kind of amazing.
It's really kind of amazing. Now, Jessica, you picked something very different, November 8th, 2016.
Yeah, I printed a risograph edition from Emily Garnard, who's an artist in Connecticut. Risograph, it's not a new form of printing. It's been around since the 70s, but it's become popular again. It's basically a method of photocopying, but instead of using toner, it uses like a different kind of toner to make it more inky. It's a really inexpensive way of printing. And Emily's book is a pamphlet, which is a really simple book structure that's saddle stapled up the middle. It's a bunch of photographs that she took on her phone of people at Hillary Clinton's election party, the place where we all thought she was going to win the presidency. And it's showing these people reacting over the course of a couple hours to the way the election actually turned out. And so it's just focused on people's faces. And there's no text in this book. It's just two color prints of people's faces. And it's really an emotional project because you can really see people's reactions to Hillary losing the election. And what's great about this book is that I feel like it's a really great example of what some people define artist books as, a democratic multiple, meaning that it's a form where you can make art that's really easy and cheap to make, and then you can send it out really fast into the world. So Emily made this book on November 9th, 2016, and then sent it out into the world immediately. She could make this book within 24 hours because of the technology she used and the images she had. And that's what's another great thing about artist books, is that artists a lot of times use them to get their message out extremely quickly, instead of having to, you know, spend like a couple months making a painting about people's reaction to Hillary Clinton losing the election, and then finding a gallery to put that painting in, and then, you know, inviting people to the opening. She just like printed a book and sent it to people. And so it was in their hands within a week, which is a really powerful way to get art messages across, I think.
Now, another thing we have to talk about is one of your long-term goals here with the Artist Book Collection is to establish a kind of timeline and history of book arts in New Orleans. And that's something you want to address at this very first opening event. And you're going to do that in a really special way, I think.
Yeah, we have invited Professor Jeff Weddle from the University of Alabama, whose specialty is in small press publications, specifically The Outsider, which was a small press, they called it magazine, that was published in the 60s. It was one of the first places that Charles Bukowski was published. And it's two New Orleans natives. Their press was Lujan Press, and they made their books basically with anything they could find. So they did not have a big budget. I think more and more that translates into people making books that are just photocopied. But these books from the Outsider book series are amazing. Instead of just photocopying things or finding ways to print cheaply. They actually printed letterpress on handmade paper and have inclusions in the book that are dried flowers or little scraps of paper, but they're all artfully placed there. And the books themselves, once you see them, you're just like, these are not just magazines. They're beautiful, beautiful art objects that have been handcrafted, and attention to every single design element has been paid. And it's just, they're amazing publications that aren't, I don't know, I've lived in New Orleans for not that many years, but I feel like the history of Lujan Press is kind of probably subsumed like a lot of the history of printing in New Orleans. So we're really trying to make that history something that we can all kind of revel in. Because from Jeff's, Professor Weddle's perspective, The Outsider was one of the best examples of a fine press publication for the 100 years that were between 1900 and 2000. So he's really excited to come down here and speak about its significance and about why it's important as both a publication and an artist book object.
Well, we should toast to these beautiful books. And people can look at them when they better bring clean hands. Am I right? Yeah. Am I right?
I wanted a kickoff event to mark the fact that people are now welcome to come here to Paper Machine anytime during the week between 9 and 4 and browse through the collection themselves. This is a collection that's extremely accessible to the public as long as you have clean hands. But we have wet wipes for people to use. And we really want this event to pay honor to the collection and to the history of bookmaking in New Orleans, but also to create some excitement about the collection and want having people come and just browse through it. That's the kind of enthusiasm that we hope we keep getting, is that people who kind of look at what we have and immediately are like, this is what I've been waiting for in New Orleans. This is great.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to thank the other organizers who've been working so hard on this collection, Monica Tyran and Nancy Sharon Collins, Sarah White and Adam Beebe. We've been working together as a team on this since last summer, and it's been a pleasure and a joy to really have this little kernel of an idea and bring it into a full realized collection. New Orleans has artist books and collections around the city and special collections, but one of the unique things about this collection is it is completely accessible, and we have worked very hard to try to set it up that way. We want to break down the barriers. We don't want people to feel intimidated by these books. We want you to hold them, and the artists who either donate them or who we purchase the books from also really want you to hold the books, to handle them, to go through the act of reading. So we leave all the books on the shelves. They're browsable. You can just kind of look through for whatever you're looking for, something that catches your eye or something specific. And that browsability for me is a really exciting thing, because that's not something that is easily done in a special collection, even though they've got a lot more sophisticated with online browsing and things like that. So that's one of the really special things about this collection that I'm really excited to share with our community.
For me too, because some of these books are books you really want to spend some time with. It's a pleasure to hold them. It's a pleasure to read them, because books are to be read. Yeah. So it's just a great enterprise. I'm excited. So we've been talking with Jessica Peterson and Yuka Petz about the artist book collection at Paper Machine. Join in the grand opening Saturday, May 19th from 1 to 3:30 at Paper Machine, 6330 St. Claude Avenue. Yuka, Jessica, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
Whitney Stewart is one of New Orleans' most versatile children's book writers. She's written biographies of the Dalai Lama, Sir Edmund Hillary, Aung San Suu Kyi, and Walt Disney. Today, we're talking about her new books, What's on Your Plate? Exploring the World of Food, illustrated by Christiane Ingle, and Mindful Me, Mindfulness and Meditation for Kids, with pictures by Stacy Peterson. Whitney Stewart, I'm so happy to have you back on The Reading Life.
Hi, Susan. It's wonderful to be here.
So first, let's talk about What's on Your Plate? Exploring the World of Food, which is such a bright and cheerful book. And it sort of seems to me inevitable that a New Orleans children's book writer would eventually get to food.
I got so into doing that book. it was fun to just explore and to find out these fun facts about food around the world that I didn't know. And I spent a couple of months actually researching all about food and picking the countries that we wanted to highlight in this book. And, you know, obviously we spent a lot of time cooking the food, too. So that was really fun. Yes. And I have a 5-year-old great niece and she came over to help me cook.
So talk about the layout of the book. It's so bright and cheerful and attractive. It's just fun to look at.
Right. Well, we wanted it to be diverse, of course, because exploring the world of food. And there are 14 different countries that we highlight. And we start with the United States, but then we just go and we've listed them as if you were going around the world on a globe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could imagine a teacher or a parent having a globe right on the kitchen counter or on the desk at the school. And you could just go around the world on the globe and you could look at all these different countries and explore the food cultures of those countries.
So how hard was it to pick a food for each country? Like, you know, for the United States, you picked corn.
Well, so it was very hard.
Some call it maize, if you know.
Yes, some call it maize. Which, the idea that we had, that my editor had for me, was that the recipe had to be simple enough mm-hmm. for a 5 or 6-year-old to do on their own and without very much help from parents. So that's very difficult. You know, think about Indian food, for example. There's
right.
a lot of components in Indian food, delicious components and lots of spices and a lot of cooking. How do we do something simple that kids can do without too much interference from their adults, their grown-ups? It was challenging to find something fun that kids would like to eat and simple. So there are many of them that we use a food processor for them so that they don't have to mess with the stove and the oven, but not all of them.
I have to say guacamole was a brilliant choice because every kid loves to do
yes.
that.
And that was so easy. That's just so easy for them to do.
And what you do here in such a lovely way is show how interconnected we all are.
Mm. And that was very, very important to me. And as I was researching and doing this, is looking at the world of food and seeing that migrations and uh-huh. invasions and just people moving from one territory to another and how that they brought food with them when they did that. And food, you know, sometimes went from Europe to the Americas and later on went from the Americas back to Europe, for example. And it's wonderful to follow. You know, it would be interesting to see that if you were riding on an olive and where it went around the world, or you were riding on a peanut or something. And, you know, there were a lot of places that food ingredient would go.
I was fascinated to see all the places that oranges grow.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Stuff
oh,
like
and
that.
That's what's delightful about the illustrations.
Yeah.
We worked very, very hard on finding what part of each country these crops will grow in. And that was challenging so that she could see, you know, where she was going to put the oranges and where she was going to put the almonds and where she was going to, you know, grow the maize and that kind of thing.
She's a British illustrator,
She's
right?
a British illustrator, yes.
So it's an international book.
Yes, it's very international. And you can see that it's very diverse. And we've got children from all around the world. And we start off them all coming together. And at the end, you know, I suggest that they all have an international food party together. And so,
yeah.
you know, it's a very diverse looking book.
Yeah. So have you found that children respond to it well?
Yes, I do. Particularly, I like to bring them over to my house and just start cooking with little ones. And they really see how easy it is to prepare food. And I'm hoping to encourage them to start doing this with the adults in their lives.
Well, they have that sense of play that we lose after time, you know, mm-hmm. which is a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. So I recommend to all adults that they get small hand cooking materials, you know, little yeah. cups and little measuring cups and little safe knives and things like that for kids to use and just get started with cooking with them.
Girl. All right.
All right.
And from there,
yes.
we become mindful.
Oh, yes,
become
mindful.
But it's all mindfulness,
yes.
really, with you, I think.
It is all mindfulness.
And the other new book is Mindful Me, Mindfulness and Meditation for Kids, which is a wonderful step-by-step guide. And you've done one picture book mm-hmm. about mindfulness for
yes.
kids, but this is a little older audience.
This is for older, yes. I've done one picture book, and I decided that I really wanted to help upper elementary, really. This is 9 to 12, so that I go into a little bit more detail on the mindfulness exercises themselves and why you would need them. And I also give a lot of anecdotes or situations that a child might be in. You say a child is having a grumpy situation with one of their friends and they can't figure out how to solve the problem. And this gives examples. Well, you could do it one way and you could have a fight and stomp off or start crying or get angry or say something that later on you wish you hadn't. or you can pause and take some mindful breaths and wait a moment and really go inside and feel what that emotion feels like inside of you and recognize that that emotion could shift and change and it doesn't have to rule you. It doesn't have to force you into saying something you wish you hadn't. And then looking at it from a different perspective, maybe even looking at it from the perspective of the person with whom you're fighting, and try to look for a better response rather than an immediate reaction in anger or frustration, whatever it is.
Oh, Whitney, you are the calmest person I know.
No, that's
I
not
feel
true.
Calmer just talking to you.
That, I promise you that is not always the case. Talk to my family.
So what was it like for you to break down your own process in this way, to have to really sit down and look at the details of mindfulness and meditation? Because this is a substantial book. I mean, this is not a short little picture book. This is a real guide. Adults could use this easily.
It took a while for me to think about that. What parts, you know, first we're talking about, you know, I'm talking about your thoughts mm-hmm. and mindful thinking and how what you think could shape who you are and how you act, so that if you begin to investigate your thoughts and what thoughts you're having, you can begin to have a little space from those thoughts and examine them and realize you are not your thoughts. So that's one element that I knew I wanted to devote a chapter to. Mm-hmm. And another is your emotions and then working with difficult emotions. You know, some kids may have sadness, maybe they've had difficulty in their lives or if they've lost someone close to them, or maybe they have issue with anger. They just go, that's their go-to emotion. And so how to work with, give them really solid ways, techniques mm-hmm. to work with those emotions. And I wanted to break it down also on getting out of yourself and going out in the community and, you know, being a better friend and a better community yeah. member. So I knew I wanted a chapter on that as well, of kindness and empathy and helping in the community. So I thought about these bigger issues and then worked from there.
How long do you think it takes something like this to become a pattern of behavior, to become a good habit?
To become a good habit, that's probably very dependent upon the individual. But research tells us that in 8 weeks of practicing 20 minutes a day for 8 weeks, just that amount. So if you mm-hmm. started today and practiced every day for 8 weeks for 20 minutes a day, you can see benefits.
Wow.
Now, the more you practice each day, the stronger the benefits. When we have these super meditators, for example, these ones who've meditated over 50,000 hours in a day, they have amazingly different brains than we do. Their brains have changed. Their connections between areas of their brain have become stronger. Their amygdala has shrunken, and that's the area that, that when the flight or fight reaction responses take place, when you're scared, for example. Their brains are very, very different than the ordinary human being because of the amount that they practice.
Are you a super meditator?
I'm not a super meditator. I wish I were, but those super meditators are ones who've been on long, long retreats. I'm talking about years-long retreats, you know.
Now, you accompany this guide with some shorter, useful things for kids. You have a Mindful Me workbook, and you have activity cards, 50 activities for kids.
Yeah, so the 50 activity cards, that's a different publisher. That is Mindful Kids by Barefoot Books, and that is a set of 50 mindfulness activities, and they're on these beautiful cards, and by Mina Braun. She did the illustrations. She's a German illustrator. And those are very, very helpful. Let's say if you had a set in your class or in your child's yoga class or at home, when you have maybe just a few minutes to do a mindfulness exercise and you've got, you know, kids, really we think of them as from age 4 to 104 because they're so simple for everyone. But you can just pull out one card and do, say, a very short loving kindness meditation, which we know now, again, from research, that when you practice kindness to others and when you meditate on kindness and compassion, it has benefits for you, not just for the other people around you.
So. Well, this is such a worthwhile thing to do for young people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something mm-hmm. you've been about as long as I've known you, really.
Yeah, that is one of my overall ideas of being a children's book writer, is really bringing fun, interesting facts to children or benefiting them somehow. And I'm hoping that what's on your plate will help them explore the world, and that Mindful Me will help them explore themselves.
Yes. Give them a little credit for a change. There's a lot to explore with these young people.
Yes, there is a lot to explore.
We've been talking with Whitney Stewart, who's the author of What's on Your Plate? Exploring the World of Food and Mindful Me, Mindfulness and Meditation for Kids. She will be part of the Raising Kind Kids in Today's World one-day seminar, Wednesday, May 16th from 9 to 3 at the Ace Hotel, 600 Carondelet Street. It's for parents, educators, therapists, grandparents, and caring adults. Go to barefootbooks.com/kindkids for ticket information. Whitney, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Whitney Stewart, author of What's on Your Plate? Exploring the World of Food and Mindful Me, Mindfulness and Meditation for Kids, will be part of Raising Kind Kids in Today's World. It's a one-day seminar Wednesday, May 16th from 9 to 3 at the Ace Hotel, 600 Carondelet Street. And it's for parents, educators, therapists, grandparents, and caring adults. Other guests include Mariana Shepherd of the Contemporary Arts Center, Dan Storper of Putumayo World Music, Vera Warren Williams of Community Book Center, Amy Kirk Duvasan of the Louisiana Children's Museum, Echo Olander of KidSmart, and others. Go to barefootbooks.com/kindkids for ticket information. Pablo Johnson moderates a discussion with Edward Lee and local chef Justin DeVillier of La Petite Grocery and Belize. And then Edward signs his book, Buttermilk Graffiti, A Chef's Journey to Discover America's New Melting Pot Cuisine. That's Wednesday, May 16th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Rita Bullwinkle discusses and signs Belly Up, her new collection of short stories, with Maurice Carlos Ruffin, Wednesday, May 16th at 6 at Octavia Books. One Book, One New Orleans, inspired by the 2018 selection New Orleans, a Food Biography by Elizabeth Williams, presents a food spelling bee, Thursday, May 17th from 6 to 8 at Second Line Brewing, 433 North Bernadotte Street. Come spell out Roux or Pan Perdu or Meunier for the win. Louis Maestros signs the new and expanded edition of his novel, The Sound of Building Coffins, Friday, May 18th at 6:30 at Crescent City Books. Jessica Peterson, Yuka Patz, and others unveil the Artist Book Collection at Paper Machine. That's Saturday, May 19th from 1 to 3:30 at Paper Machine, 6330 St. Claude Avenue. Jeff Weddle will be on hand to discuss the work of John Edgar Webb and Gypsy Lou Webb and Lou John Press, as well as collector Carla Williams of Material Life. NBA player and general manager Elgin Baylor discusses and signs Hang Time, My Life in Basketball, Saturday, May 19th at 2 at Octavia Books. Brian Camp signs The City of Lost Fortunes, Saturday, May 19th at 2 at Tubby & Goose Mid-City Bookshop. If you're a Walker Percy fan, you want to see photographer Jared Ragland's exhibit called Everything is Going to Be All Right, inspired by the moviegoer. It's on view at the front, 4100 St. Claude Avenue, until early June. One Book, One New Orleans hosts its annual fundraiser, Juleps in June, June 1st at 6 at 1413 Phillips Street, to support One Book and Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans. For ticket info, go to onebookonenola.org. You can buy tickets at Eventbrite. Also coming up June 1st through 3rd is the annual Walker Percy Weekend in West Feliciana Parish, with an emphasis this year on the work of Shelby Foote as well. Check out walkerpercyweekend.org to buy tickets. They're going fast. The event is headquartered at Conundrum Books in St. Francisville. And the Symphony Book Fair is coming up June 1st through 3rd at the Lakefront Arena in New Orleans. Hours are 9 to 8 Friday through Saturday, June 1st through 2nd, and 9 to 4 Sunday, June 3rd. There is an admission fee for a first look Friday from 9 to 3. This is the largest book fair in the South and includes art and music as well. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.